Lecture 2, Byzantine Orthodox Civilization.
In this lecture, I wish to sketch the Byzantine world in the time of the Emperor Basil II, who ruled from 976 to 1025, often known as Basil the Bulgar Slayer, Bulgar Octonos in Greek. And the reason for the choice of that reign is that he represents the epitome of what is known as the Middle Byzantine State. In the year 1000, as I mentioned earlier, Constantinople was clearly the greatest Christian state, bar none. And in his reign, many of the institutional, religious, and cultural features of the Byzantine world are articulated, and this is the world in which the Crusaders will come into contact. And I think Basil's reign is a good way of showing how the Byzantine world looked when the Crusaders arrived in 1095. And he's living approximately a generation and a half earlier than the Crusades. He ruled from the city of Constantinople, founded by the Emperor Constantine back in the 4th century AD, which was hailed the New Rome. And through much of Byzantine literature, Constantinople is often referred to as the New Rome. And by the time of the Crusades, for a variety of reasons, the Byzantines were very, very finicky about insisting that they were the New Rome and that the old Rome was really quite inferior. The city was also hailed as the Queen of Cities. Both Byzantine and Western writers speak of the city that way. Now, Basil II, as all Byzantine emperors, ruled over a powerful bureaucratic state. This state had adopted the use of the Greek language in the 7th century as its administrative language. The emperors were often known as a basileus, a king in ancient Greek. Many of the Roman Latin terms had been translated in Greek or had been replaced by Greek terms, and the empire was largely Greek-speaking. Its core was what is now Asia Minor, Turkey, the Aegean Islands, Greece, the Lower Balkans. But the Byzantines also controlled extremely important possessions in southern Italy and had claims in Basil's time to Sicily as well, which was still a majority of Greek speakers. However, Basil's empire had influences that radiated far beyond the political frontiers. The Byzantine missionaries had been successful in converting the South Slavic peoples as well as the Russians. And starting in 989, the Prince of Kiev, Vladimir, embraced the Orthodox faith and was married to the sister of Basil II. So the Byzantine state is often referred to as a Byzantine commonwealth in the time of Basil II, was more than just its immediate political area. Furthermore, this Byzantine emperor was the heir to political and ideological traditions that go all the way back into the late Roman period and even earlier. Byzantine emperors insisted that they were equal to the apostles, iso apostolicus in Greek. They often also maintained they were the new David, and they had a mixture of images coming out of the Old Testament and out of Greek religious themes from the late Roman period, in which the emperor was seen essentially as a partner to the patriarch, that is, the spiritual head of the Orthodox Church. Patriarch and emperor were often seen as working in tandem. They resided in the same capital, that made it all the more easy, and there are occasions where patriarchs and emperors clashed. And in those circumstances, the Byzantines themselves saw that not so much as a struggle between church and state as a schism, a cutting within the single Orthodox community, which hits that theme I mentioned earlier in previous lectures, that the Byzantine world did see a coincidence of spiritual and political authority, that there was a single Orthodox community administered by a Byzantine emperor as well as an Orthodox patriarch. Emperors also elaborated their great ceremonial role. In the course of the two centuries before Basil II, you got the impression that a Byzantine emperor never held a normal conversation. At least that's what state occasions seem to indicate. The emperor was glorified and dignified. There is an elaborate set of instruments that were created in the imperial throne room, including a mechanical bird tree powered by steam. There was also something of a barber chair, which was devised by the emperor Theophilus, where the emperor would receive barbarians, envoys, and he would be seated. The barbarian envoy would bow down and present his petition. The emperor would press a button. The seat went to the second level. There was a quick costume change, and then the emperor was sent down. And when the barbarian looked up, the emperor, who had previously been in emeralds, was now in rubies, and they were just amazed. How could the emperor do this? Now some of these devices seem rather simple to us, but they were impressive to the peoples of the time. Byzantium also had the Roman architectural traditions, its churches, notably Hagia Sophia, and all of these were employed as diplomatic emblems and weapons for the Byzantine emperor. There was nothing more impressive than to be taken into a full mass in Hagia Sophia. There are reports of certain Russians, especially Queen Olga, converting simply by the fact that God must dwell in this magnificent church.